Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to your favorite podcast. At least I hope it's your favorite podcast, the Mod State Podcast. John Hardy.
It better be.
It better be. If not, turn it off. You're done. Well, don't do that. How you been?
Well, I was wondering if I was ready to rock and roll, but then here you've been out wandering in the woods.
I know. Yeah.
Just cavorting amongst the fairies and the fawns.
Well,
I've made land in the land of fruits and nuts.
Oh yeah, that's California.
Colloquially speaking, I love parts of it, yeah. But
you're right. Well, for everyone's like, what are you talking about? I did spend the better part of the weekend in the mountains, in the lower alpine, fly fishing and hanging out. So it was wonderful. But I quickly was reverted back to reality this week and why we're talking about what we're talking about on this podcast today. But either way, go ahead and give shout outs to listeners here. Thank you for tuning in. Obviously, you can find us in all the places you're listening to podcasts. iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, Podomatic, FM. The list is getting too long. I'll probably have to stop doing this. But either way, thank you for listening.
We'll have it all front and center once we get a few things rolled out here. It'll make a lot more sense.
Indeed. And YouTube, of course. We do need to resurrect a couple videos and put them on there.
Perhaps my stay in the City of Angels is just such an occasion.
Indeed. Well, boy oh boy, you said that we needed to drop Big Lebowski quotes, but so we'll just go ahead and start with the one. Some new shit has come to light, man. Yeah. I don't know if I got that.
You asked me, I'm precast, you asked me, you said, so we need to talk about this thing. I just cracked up. That was the only response I could offer you. Yeah.
You know, there's
as a current events magazine.
Yeah, there
I feel compelled.
There's just some things that I want to put off. However, the timeliness of it, and just what the actual WTF happened. What we do know, ladies and gentlemen, is that our president of the United States flew to Europe to meet with NATO and allies, and then journeyed on to Helsinki, the capital of Finland, to what he proclaimed his more favorite, is that the way to say it, the better part of the trip, and that was to sit down with the one and only Vladimir Putin. So
Now that's you labeling it that, yes.
No.
His favorite portion of the trip?
No. He. There's a quote, I'll have to find it, where he literally said that that was the better part of the trip.
No.
Yeah.
See, I had deliberately detached from this. I decided to make my working vacation here a little bit more on the vacation side, just for 2 or 3 days. For one thing, the jet lag is just killing me. But with that, I got caught up on a lot of stuff. I missed that.
Yeah, and maybe I'm misquoting a bit. Maybe, but it was something along those lines. Like the more memorable, the better, the more constructive part.
Grandma Angela Merkel was mean,
but yeah.
Granddaddy Vladimir.
Well, so before we talk about Vlad,
and balls and showing us with the touching and.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's probably behooves us to go ahead and just touch briefly on what happened with NATO. And essentially what had happened was there's a move to increase funding from everyone that's in NATO to 2% of their GDP by, I think, 2020 or 2024.
To their military.
To NATO and to their, so I think it's a combination of like right. NATO and their military.
Right. They're talking about their overall defense spending needs to
exactly.
be 2% of what their country can produce in a year.
Exactly. Trump walked, so there was a little back and forth. He basically not denounced, but had harsh words for NATO. And then at the end, came out of it saying it was constructive and that they're actually looking at spending more and moving that from 2% to 4%. So we see this narrative with the president, who seems to make these catastrophes and then walks himself out of it as sort of the hero. And I'm not really lampooning him for this. I'm just saying this is seems to be what happens. It's like a crisis is created. NATO's falling apart. And then he kind of walks away, comes back. And A was great. We negotiated. It's going to be 4% by 2024. And it just leaves everybody kind of bewildered. Like, what actually?
It's like, yeah, it's like the late 60s or maybe 1970 comedy with Barbara Streisand, What's Up, Doc, where there's this this guy who's trying to steal this bag from this rich old lady, and he's trying to consult with his coworker on how to pull it off. He's like, look, just use your charm. So he goes and he is following after her in the lobby of this hotel, and then just abruptly sticks his leg out in front of her and trips her and starts to help her off. She's freaking out, trying to bite him.
Yeah, and so what happened as well was he went to...
Is that where we're at?
That's where we're at. He went to England, and he met with Theresa May. And if you noticed, he did that the Sun interview where he basically shit all over Brexit and her ability to navigate Brexit. And then...
that's the part of it that was more interesting to me was I didn't take it as a repudiation of Brexit itself. I definitely thought it was kind of a... weighing in of no confidence on the prime minister, however.
Yes, that's what it was. And he had to literally go have a working lunch with her the next day. And he came out later and had more words of encouragement. So it was like, let's create a disaster to then drive the narrative and walk away the better man, supposedly.
I know this isn't going to make anybody feel better, but mark this down as another check in the box. We need to do statistically see what whether it be legislation, executive orders, executive actions, et al., on presidents delivering on or attempting to deliver on campaign promises in their first couple of years. Excuse me.
We can start that in.
Well, because here's the deal. This is yet another campaign promise, this scolding of NATO. Because, yes, he was wrong on that. He wants Europe. He made a comment about 4%, and the U.S. isn't even doing that. Mm-hmm. Well, even with that being the case, the fact is a large element of his voting bloc felt like that we have been taking advantage of, fair or otherwise, in deals foreign. And it is kind of interesting to hear the leader of the free world, if you will, label a situation where our currency is the world's global reserve currency. Everything is centered around our using it as an international investment currency, a currency of last resort, and countries that don't even really, they probably don't even want to hear the name again, okay, are not friends of ours, but they let us use their ports.
Mm-hmm.
We're everywhere. Well, that situation didn't just get there overnight.
No, and you're right.
And they voted for an agent of change, is my bottom line here.
Yeah,
this is the way to go about it.
Yeah, I don't know diplomatically if it's the way to go about it. However, you know, I sort of come back and forth about NATO. I think that really ultimately building alliances is probably the way to go over sort of isolationism or America first. Of course, I mean, I live in America. I served. I'm all for...
Right. What fundamentally changed? I mean, let's get to the second part of this, best part of this week then, because that's my macro question here is what fundamentally has changed as a result of that event and the one you're about to talk about.
Sure. So let's move on to Helsinki then. And again, one thing that we do know, and we'll talk about this, I think maybe on the next podcast, is we're sort of living and carrying over from a world, you know, we're always evolving. Globalization is obviously a fairly new advent, I guess, in history of the world, and specifically modern globalism is today. And so we are evolving, and there we do have to adapt. And however, what happened in Helsinki, Donald Trump went and met with Vladimir Putin, and it really came off as, again, this is the second dictator, I guess. I mean, for the Putin isn't a dictator, but he pretty much is.
Oh, please.
Yeah, he pretty much is.
I'm going to go up.
Yeah. So this is the second time he's done this. And there was obviously a two-hour closed door meeting with a working lunch, and then a press conference in which Vladimir Putin actually looked fairly, very composed. It looked like he pretty much kind of dominated the news conference and just his eloquency, I suppose. And I'm not really being an apologist for him. That's not the point. This is just what happened. And Donald Trump came out and he essentially went against the evidence and the narrative that his entire intelligence agencies have put forward. And that is that there was meddling or in the American election, and not necessarily changing votes, but at least sowing seeds of discord. And he essentially said that his quote was essentially, why would I believe that it's Russia? Or I think it was along those lines. There was a word that he used, and it was would. And the whole intelligence community, Democrats and even Republicans, and the American people came out and basically said this was up to a point of treason. And I'm not maybe going to go that far.
that's funny coming from an absentee landlord population.
However,
can't even get half of us to vote.
However, it did not unify the way I believe a leader like the President of the United States should unify, specifically around his agencies or the agencies of the United States.
So I mean, what would you like to have seen?
Well,
what about the President's? President Trump's, not just the president's. Let me be real specific here.
The president.
What about Donald John Trump, president of the United States, his visit to with NATO leaders and with the Russian president? What about all that would you have done differently?
Sure.
What would you like to have been the product?
So I think we have to step back and look at this geopolitically again, right? And this is what we like to do on this podcast.
Because remember what else is on the board? The whole North Korea-China deal.
Mm-hmm.
He's criticized Germany as Iran's biggest trading partner.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're being clumsily connected or not is irrelevant. There are some dots starting to be connected here.
Exactly. So what I would have liked to see. So let's step back here and create a framework for this. So just bear with me for a moment. But
you just raised that roof, Nate, and then we'll all be like, whoop, there it is.
Whoop, there
it is. It's so true.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So one thing that some people have asked in the past and even up to today is, doesn't America meddle in elections? And the answer to that question, as most people should know, or if they can take an educated guess, is yes. America meddles in elections.
Fake news.
Well, it's real news, and we've been doing
it. You're being the real enemy of the state right now.
I sure am. We've done it in Chile. We did it in Iran. We did it
in Serbia.
You
hanging out with Bell in there?
What?
Che Guevara?
Yeah, you know me. I'm wearing that T-shirt. So the Central Intelligence Agency and, for a better part, now the State Department have been very fundamental in this, and they do it with PSYOP, psychological warfare.
Has anybody heard of the CIA?
That's a good question. Well,
there's your answer. And do we meddle in foreign elections?
And yes, we do. So the question then is, is there a moral equivalency between American meddling and Russian meddling?
No, the new debate becomes, is the CIA fake news?
They would like to be fake news.
Well, because that in and of itself, like I just said, could be used to verify this one way or the other. Well, then the argument would be fake news. It's like, what, the CIA is?
Yeah, well.
Is the building even there?
I know it's there.
We've never been at war with Eurasia. We've always been at war with East Asia.
Now you're doing some 1984 stuff.
Listen,
the bottom line is my answer.
This is like a permanent acid trip.
It is. I will give you that. What I will say is that if you create, that there is no moral equivalency. And I'm not, I agree that this just depends on your perspective, right? If you're sitting in the driver's seat of a different country, then
there is no kind of equivalence of any kind that I can derive.
No. But the question is, why? So why is there no moral equivalency? And that's because overwhelmingly, and I'm sure there's some bad actors, I'm sure there's bad players, there's dark stuff that we don't know about.
President Trump is just wrong about everything and just needs to accept it.
Yeah, but what America has done for the better part is try to promote democratic values throughout the world. And we have failed and we've succeeded in different places. And that's different from the promotion of...
Women got to vote in Afghanistan.
They did. And, you know... We
don't know if they're still voting or not.
We don't. I don't. But the point is that Russia, or what they would like to be the USSR, the promotion of what they want is very different from the promotion of democracy. And I think most Russians, citizens who aren't involved in the government or in the oligarchy, would probably like that as well. And that this is where there is no moral equivalency and leads to what I would like to see, or what I would have liked to seen in Helsinki and with NATO. So that is the hard lines that need to be created for countries like Russia, who would like to bring the USSR back to its glory, which we already know he wants to do because he annexed Crimea and he pushed into Georgia within, I think it's probably the last decade. So this brand of political ideology is far different from even though the somewhat flawed brand of democracy that we have. I'm not saying it's perfect. However, it's more perfect than, or more better, as they say in Hawaii, than the brand,
more perfect union.
Yeah, than the brand of politics and ideology that is promoted by Putin in the USS or the Russia, or what he would like to be the USSR. So that, to me, is the hard line, that we don't want that. And that, to me, shows that we need more unification with our European partners, with our partners around the world, to stop something like that, to stop things like North Korea or the promotion of communism from China and from Russia, whatever brand of politics that is, or whatever brand of ideology that is. So to me...
this is where I've gotten very put off of the ideologues, though. Or ideologues, if you're Jordan Peterson, as he said. But it's gotten to the point where I'm going, so regardless, you're going to go whatever your agency, party, et cetera, line is over anybody's good except for that particular group. And if somebody gets helped out as a fringe benefit, great. But you don't give a damn about the country. And that's a lot of different groups of people that could be said about in business, et cetera. You know, who then, like I said, this is all very hard to take seriously.
Yeah. So, but you do see my point about how I would have rather seen red lines created than the meeting that they had. Which the meeting they had, again, we don't really know what they talked about in the 2-hour meeting. But I think I would have rather have seen a leader who established again that annexing other or former USSR nations like the Ukraine, Crimea, moving into Georgia, that those are hard lines that we won't tolerate. That we won't tolerate that brand of political ideology to sow seeds of dissent.
Do you see the point, though, that there are many war-weary Americans that, frankly, don't want to get involved?
Yeah.
I'm not in the right to feel that way because it's dangerous talk.
Well, you mean an actual war with Russia.
Period. Syria, they don't want to go there.
No, absolutely. And I don't think that you need to create hard lines that involve war.
It doesn't matter. The point is, with his base, the people that did all of the bleeding and dying in these wars, or the majority of them, you know, they're war-weary, and frankly, they don't care what happens in Crimea.
I guess the point then is, what was the point then? Of sitting down with him? I mean, what sort of relationship are we going to forge with Russia? Look, I'm the first person to say...
I know this has got to be colloquial or just the general you, because I know you're not asking me to perform intellectual surgery here.
Sure. No, I would never do that.
Okay, because... that would just be highly unfair, unsportsmanlike.
Well, okay, so I guess my point is, what is the point of sitting down and talking to them? What do we have to gain necessarily from this? I mean,
at the end of this... God's holy name are you blathering about, man?
Exactly. So really, he had a chance to sit down, have a fairly standard meeting with Vladimir Putin, but instead walked away and created a huge domestic debacle and a fairly global bemusement, if you will, or befuddling of the greater international community by literally saying, look, you know, and okay, so he came home then, and his administration essentially was trying to figure out how they were going to approach this fallback. From both the right and the left, who had some very strong words against his visit with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
So he came out.
You can't really say blowback anymore with the bad taste that Lewinsky and company left in everybody's mouths.
Well, okay. So what what he did do, his administration had him give a gave him a scripted speech essentially that said, look, I misspoke. When I said, I don't know why it would be Russia, he said, what I meant was, I don't know why it wouldn't be Russia. It was a double negative. So he came back and he walked it back and he said, look, I completely misspoke. And I think the broader community, international and domestic community, was like, that sounds like some bullshit. But it's like, why do we have to go to these lengths?
At the end of the day, I don't know whether it's BS or not.
It smells like it. I don't know, man. Like, it just doesn't. Again, I don't know how prepared he really is to sit down with these leaders. I don't know if he knows enough about the issues. I mean, look, you can have the most well-seasoned team around you. You can have the best people around you. But if you're not able to then be the leader that exudes the principles and exudes all the information that has been given to you, then that's where you fail. And this what this was. It was a failure. And again, he's walked it back, and this is not me from the left just attacking him. It just was a blunder. And you don't sit down with someone like this and try to find common ground. That's not what you do with Vladimir Putin. If you find common ground, he's going to take that inch and make it a mile. That's what this guy does. We have to be very clear of what he wants, and what his ideology is far different and polar opposite from what American ideology or democracy is.
And you're basing this on his employment at the KGB.
Well, I guess when it comes to that being a number of things, but yeah, I guess when you talk individually,
I mean, I get the bare-chested horseback riding might be than just a little risque.
It's a little much.
WTF.
No, I think when you, I mean, this is a tactical politician and a tactical person. This is Vladimir Putin. This is an ex-KGB intelligence officer who's essentially gained, 18 years of control in Russia. He's not stupid.
Versus someone who in the president you feel is only interested in seeing his name in lights.
I mean, probably if you compare him to Vladimir Putin, I mean, I think Putin wants
to. Versus what you just said.
Yes, that's the difference between these two men. There is a very clear agenda of Vladimir Putin. There is not for Donald Trump. I mean, I'm not saying there's not, but like deep in his core, it viscerally, they want different things. They want, I'm not saying they don't want power, they don't want control, but there's far more.
Not in the same solar system on Israel.
True. But there is not, there's, Vladimir Putin is a far more calculated individual than Donald Trump is and ever will be. I mean, Donald Trump wants to run the United States for 18 years if he had the chance, but his vision for that, I think, is not as crafted and not as well thought out, I think.
I don't think it's as malicious either.
No, I don't think so either. No, I'm not comparing the two.
I get that. I know, but I'm saying this because there's been, especially with some of the young people I've talked with out here, there's been this, first of all, they couldn't tell you, if their life depended upon it, a way of what you just said, how that negatively impacts America. You know, it's an on-demand time we live in, okay? But I guess overall, like before going forward, I want to be fair here that regardless of how the message came out, okay, if you feel what I'm trying to say regarding the president and his, I don't want to say reticence, whether he misspoke or not, I don't know. But he deserves a fair day in court, and I don't think he's going to get it in the court of public opinion.
Look, and I'm going beyond what was.
I know,
just
I just said. That was an abortion of a paragraph there, and I apologize for that.
No, it's not. I'm trying to.
No, really, I murdered that paragraph, that string of sentences.
I think I am looking at this in a more macro term, or a more macro sense, it wasn't just the phrase that he uttered. It was the entire thing. It wasn't just the, well, why would it be Russia? It was just the lack of substance to what it was. And there were no hard lines drawn. There were no red lines. There was no real backup from the international or backup to the international community. It was, I don't know what it was. And that's what I think frustrates a lot of people, especially seasoned State Department folks, people that really follow this, that it wasn't really anything. It was a 45-minute, so I think Vladimir Putin got more hard questions from Chris Wallace in the interview than he did with the President of the United States. And what that does is...
No, verifying that one way or the other.
What's that?
There's no verifying that one way or the other, obviously.
Not really, but you would think the president would talk about those things, right?
Okay, so for there's two groups here with that confirmation bias. The kids that they only are going to get their information if one of the Kardashians, you know, Kylie Jenner or company tweets about it, then it's in their world. So I would love to hear Kim Kardashian bring this down to layman's terms on why this situation matters. Please elaborate.
But
on the other side, in academia... Okay, they couldn't possibly care less about things like the State of Israel or the Eastern Bloc anymore.
But, okay, so to come back to my...
So what difference does it make?
Even though we might not know, I mean, I still feel like we would have heard a fairly articulated message that was put across to Vladimir Putin. I mean, regardless of what you think, whether the Eastern Bloc matters or Israel does...
I'm not commenting one way or the other.
I'm saying whether or not people care about this or not, that's what should have been done, and it wasn't. And if you're going to sit down with people like this, if you're going to sit down with any sort of dictator or authoritarian in the world, you don't have a meet and greet, photo op, hey, yeah, you know, our relations have really sucked, and it's been no worse than it is today, but we're gonna change that. Change it for what? Like, what are we changing? What common ground are we trying to find? I'm the first person that world peace sounds great and kumbaya, but you're not really doing anything for the broader community. All you're doing is emboldening and empowering that specific person that you're sitting down with. In this case, it was Vladimir Putin. So that's what bothers me and frustrates me on a geopolitical level. Is it going to matter in 6 months? Probably not. But as for right now, it's sort of interesting to see domestically how this plays out with Republicans and Democrats who are vying for re-election in the midterms and the way they may distance themselves or come out with the rhetoric against the president. We don't really need to go down that road, but it overall just wasn't a good look. And this is another not that great of a look on the international stage. And again, I'm all for empowering allies and creating the unity in the international community, in whether that's NATO or the UN. I think those are important.
So feelings are hurt?
No, I don't. It goes beyond feelings being hurt. It's what we're trying to achieve. And I think this missed the point. This entire meeting missed the point of what we could achieve with a power that is Russia, a dangerous power that is Russia. You don't
just
think...
coming off a World Cup we weren't at. I mean, pray tell.
In context of what?
I just go back to the fact you're not going to move his base one way or the other. They not only see this as the fulfillment of a campaign promise, hey, why can't we get along with Russia, you know? Okay, check another box there. Whether you agree with them or not is irrelevant.
Well,
it's something he campaigned about. And then beyond that, there's so much confirmation bias either way. You know, the Democrats helped foment the situation that elected Donald Trump. That's why that column I encourage everybody to take a long, hard look in the mirror, every American citizen, if they want to know how we got here. But on the other side of the aisle, the GOP was so desperate to win, it's kind of like the Joker in the Dark Knight, and they're in their desperation, they turned to somebody they didn't understand.
Which is true.
This is what we're sitting in. It's our tree.
Yeah, and to a greater degree, I do agree with you on that. And I think that's probably for for another podcast to talk about all that. But again, I think in conclusion, I wish I know we're
looking at this two completely different ways. It's just I'm going.
Yeah, I think maybe if I'm hearing you correctly, it's sort of like
not necessarily kosher what you heard, but at the end of the day, not to be Hillary Clinton, but what difference does it make?
I guess that's what you're saying. Like at the end of the day, what does this really sort of matter? And I agree to an extent with that. It's just, to me, it's like, if you're going to do, it's like my dad always said, if you're going to do it right, and do it right the first time. And that's maybe what I would have liked to seen. And I guess I didn't, so, but more to be seen. Well, maybe not. I hope we have no more of these, but.
Oh, this is the tale that doesn't end, my friend.
Yeah, maybe in midterms, no. You're right. Maybe it's that tale is not going to end.
Well, I mean, and I, God forbid the aneurysms I could cause by saying this, but when he's reelected and everybody realizes, ooh, there's four more years of this.
I believe if that's the case, the expat community will get just a little bit bigger. Maybe not. I don't know.
It's like, well, you're always threatening to leave, but you never deliver.
Please just go. Oh my gosh. Well, I think we beat that one to a dead horse, my friend. We're at 30 minutes and we've got some more podcasting to do. So with that.
Oh, and before. Oh,
yes.
Before I say au revoir, vive la France.
Oh, yes. I had that in my notes. Well, we were, at least I was, right with one third of the group that.
Yeah, you and I both got France right.
Yes. Did I pick Croatia? I don't remember. Yeah, I did. I did.
You did.
I did. And I felt vindicated, and that at least one of my predictions was right. Well, two, technically.
Let me tell you, this World Cup was bizarre. It might be the best of our lifetimes, and it's a shame we weren't there.
Man, it could be. I don't know. I don't know how you have a more exciting kind of upset type of World Cup.
It felt like it was anybody's cup. I mean,
it really was.
I was worried that France wasn't going to take Croatia seriously because their mind has been prone to wander at times. But yeah, people can argue the video assistant call and the handball and all that, but at one moment in that game when it was 4-1, there was a real sensation of, my God, are they going to make it 6-1?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the game had clearly left. And you know what? They had played, their starters had played, some of them had played 200 minutes more than France's starters because they went to extra time on everything.
Yeah, they did.
France didn't. They finished in regulation.
Man, every one of those games was worth watching. I think,
Croatia was probably the most entertaining team at the tournament.
Oh man, I go back and I think about it. I didn't watch all of their games, but definitely in the knockout rounds, it was awesome. It was great. It was a great game to watch.
They got nothing to hang their heads about.
No, I mean, they were welcomed back to Croatia, like parades and everything. And when I was thinking, reading those articles, I was like, absolutely. I mean, that was a hell of a run.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I feel bad for Luka Modric, the captain in one sense, but also, I mean, even if he doesn't have another run in him, you guys got your point across.
Yeah, you have nothing to hang your head at.
Yeah, I mean, it took until the 65th minute there. You know, for a while, the game felt close. But, you know, and again, you think about it, 200 minutes more, folks, that's, you know, regulation is 90 minutes. So that's like, that's over two extra games.
Yeah.
The Croatian players had on their legs. And hey, fair is fair. It's not France's fault they didn't win in regular time.
Yeah.
That they took everything to penalties.
Yeah. And they're a young team, too. I think they'll be pretty dominant next go around as well.
But anyway, yes, for all the folks that were wondering the whole time, who do we root for? This is real easy, folks. I get it. The rivalry with Mexico makes that a little weird to be like being an Alabama fan and saying you're going to go for LSU in the Sugar Bowl. It's just not going to happen, you know? Well, so you go for the country that made this country possible. I don't know, France, maybe? So. Vive la France and au revoir.